The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back to the Dan Prof Show. The next guest on the program is the president of an organization that has one of my favorite slogans, which is connecting good intentions to sound economics. What a concept, if only that were the mantra of more of our public policymakers. He is Father Robert Sirico. He is the president and co-founder of the Acton Institute. Father Sirico, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Delighted to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Last week, CBS News reported that more than 12,000 Catholic churches in the United States had applied for the Payroll Protection Loan Forgiveness Program the federal government set up in this era of COVID-19, and some 9,000 parishes received PPP funding. That may be good economics, but is that good theology?
Well, I don't think it's good theology or good economics. let me explain why. I can understand that there are very particular local circumstances that would press upon people to do it. It's desirable. I have a parish. I run a parish with a school. I run the Acton Institute, which was also eligible for this funding. But my fear is that he who drinks the king's wine sings the king's song. Mm. And even though they say, you know, you make this loan and it's really a grant that down the line we'll see what we can do for you, I'm just a little afraid of the entanglement of government with religion. The other thing I'm concerned with is the mentality on the part of religious organizations to think that we can resort to the government as our support. We are supposed to be planning and developing and organizing ourselves for private charitable endeavors at the most local level. And for us to go outside that, I think, is at the very least dubious and perhaps imprudent. I wouldn't say this is heresy, but I think it needs to be thought through very thoroughly.
Well, and just building on that, too, you know, it's ironic, right, because all of the separation of church and state folks are always worried about somehow the church is going to overtake the state, when right. In point of fact, the real concern and the real thing that houses of worship and clergy guard against is the state interfering with the operation of the church or the house of worship. Exactly. And
exactly.
So they
regulate our soup kitchens. They regulate
right.
our schools. They regulate our hospitals and our orphanages. And this is another way of intruding.
Well, and here's my concern, too, in addition to what you said, which is the notion that, look, if you protect the downside, then you have a claim to regulate the upside. So
yeah.
Whether the loan is forgiven or not, you've given yourself a path to interference, meaning the state, into places of worship.
Right. And, you know, in our school, I came here 8 years ago in this parish, and in our school, we had a hot lunch program. And we closed out the hot lunch program because I was afraid of what federal mandates were going to be placed upon our school in exchange for providing that food. By the way, the following year, we realized that we saved $40,000.
Hmm.
Very interesting dynamic.
Since we're on the topic, I went to a talk you gave in Chicago a couple years back, and I thought you had a great argument that you've memorialized in writing, too, but people need to hear this, about how confiscatory taxation, speaking of the state interference, is actually a taking as it pertains to people of faith who want to send their children to a school of their faith.
Right. I mean, just look at it, obviously. People who have their children in parochial schools, whether they're Catholic schools or Protestant schools or yeshivas, are in effect paying twice for the education of their children, first in the form of taxation, and then in the tuition that they have to pay to the school in order for the school to survive. Wouldn't it be much better to allow parents to have discretionary use of that money in the education of their kids, and even their employers? Let their employers say, look, as a part of the employment package, we will give you X amount of dollars for your kids to go to school. I mean, it's far more innovative than thinking of the state as the first resource that we turn to in everything. And this whole debacle with the stimulus money is another example of that. We flooded these organizations, these state organizations, with money rather than, why not just give a tax holiday? Let people not pay taxes for a year. And then they have all those resources available to them. And for those who are very poor and don't pay taxes, then we provide something in a kind of a tax rebate or a tax funding, you know, support.
When we come back, I want to get your observations about what you're seeing with respect to the shutdown and the social distancing guidelines and the regulation of churches and houses of worship having services during this pandemic. More with Father Robert Sirico, president and co-founder of the Acton Institute, right after this.
Exposing political fakers, fixers, and takers. He's Dan Proft, and this is The Dan Proft Show.
Welcome back to the Dan Proft Show. We're speaking with Father Robert Sirico. He's the president and co-founder of the Acton Institute. And before we get on to some of the fights between churches and governments around the country over the ability to have service, the ability to operate their parish or their church, I wanted to also give you the opportunity to discuss the moral case for the free market. I mean, again, the Acton Institute connecting good intentions to sound economics. And you wrote a book a few years back that was an excellent treatise on the free market, the moral case for the free market, in a way that few, particularly of the cloth, are willing to defend it these days. And so I wanted you to explicate your view that the capitalism is the most moral economic system.
Basically, every facet of our life in this world is touched by economics. And what economics is basically the allocation of scarce resources. We all live in the context of scarcity. The moral dimension of it is to consider the fact that the person who produces wealth ought to be considered the owner of that wealth, and not first and foremost the state. This is important not only because of this moral connection between a human being and their property, but also because they know best what to do. So the government doesn't really know. It's removed from people's lives. It can guess. It can create cookie-cutter solutions to problems. So it's a dissipation of knowledge, so that, in effect, society becomes dumber the further away from the local situation the decisions are being made. So that's just one element of the moral case for a free economy. The commandment against theft undergirds the importance of private property and everything that surrounds, all the other institutions that surround private property. I should add a caveat. I'm not a fan of the word capitalism, both because it has Marxist orientation or origin, but secondly because it's too narrowly focused on one dimension of economics, capital formation. Now, that's very important, but there's so much else that's involved in human action on an economic level, the moral decision-making, the sense of responsibility, the knowledge that I mentioned for what is needed and what isn't needed. All of this goes into play, and I elaborate that, of course, extensively in my book.
Human action, von Mises invocation there. And I like that, too, because one of the things I try to, and I shouldn't have said capitalism, I should have said free market, because that's actually the title of your book, The Case for the Free Market.
Right.
But the orientation of business as a social service provider, or a service provider at minimum. But that's what a business is. A business is a service provider. If you don't provide a service that people value, then you don't stay in business.
Exactly. And this is another thing that people have as a misconception about the market, that it's all about selfishness. and not at all about service. It's, of course, it's about service, because you can't accumulate profit if you're not serving people, not in a free economy. You can do this in a political economy. You can do it with crony capitalism or favoritism. But in a free economy, you have to exchange something that other people see as valuable to them in their lives.
When you read the stories that we're all reading about churches running up against the state with these shutdown orders, and you can only have 10 people in your church at any given time, Department of Justice has weighed in a couple of cases in Mississippi and Virginia on behalf of the church. Attorney General Barr has said he's watching very closely. Justice is watching very closely the treatment of people's First Amendment rights. How are you watching this and receiving this? How concerned are you about infringements on religious liberty not going away after COVID-19 does?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's the categorization of religion, or I should say the marginalization of religion, as a non-essential service. Mm. And this flies in the face of our entire history as an American republic. Secondly, let me say, who knows best what is needed and what distancing is needed? You know, I want to stipulate that I think we obviously have a real health crisis, and we need to minimize the contagion by separating ourselves appropriately, cleaning, and all the rest of that. That's not what is in dispute. And there are a few religious groups that went crazy, especially right at the beginning. Some of their pastors have died from the contagion. That's not what I'm talking about.
Right.
I'm not talking about completely disregarding common sense. But the notion that you have an arbitrary, and this epitomizes the government mentality, we're going to put 10 people. Well, you're going to put 10, allow me to have 10 people in my church, and I'm the pastor of a little Baptist church that holds 50 people. And then you're going to tell me, as the pastor of a Catholic church that holds 750 people, that I can have 10 people in mm-hmm. my church. Mm-hmm. And then let me ask you this. Is it 10 people, all of whom are in the same family, who live together? Only those 10 people? Or can I have 10 families, all of whom live together, which then will exceed the number? You see the kind of absurdity, this kind of cookie-cutter approach to the thing, rather than saying, educating pastors who need to be educated about the contagion, the various protocols needed to minimize the contact, and then let people make decisions on local levels based on their, I would say, elderly people, people who are in vulnerable situations, of course they shouldn't be. But when you have young people, when you have children, this is not the issue that we're dealing with right now. We're dealing with an older and vulnerable population who are at risk for dying from this disease.
And just again, to accentuate the concern, Knox County, Tennessee, is a state that's relatively moving relatively quickly to reopen and is relatively more respectful of religious liberty than some other states. But yet Knox County, Tennessee, no hymnals, no Bibles, because, you know, they have surface area that could carry the virus. Again, to your point, who's better positioned to make sure things are sanitized and so forth? You can't have a Bible, but can you have a bulletin? What is it you can and can't have? And you're going to have that even governed at the local level by county government seems crazy to me.
And it sets the precedent. You see, it sends a message that somehow religion is marginal. The access to clergy in hospitals is another example of it. You have food service and you have people who go in and clean those rooms, but you can't have a clergyman stand by the bedside of a dying person and send them off into eternity.
Mm-hmm.
These kinds of prejudices, it really does represent a secularist, scientistic mentality. It just views the person as a patient and not as a person.
Prejudices, that's the word. He is Father Robert Sirico, president and co-founder of the Acton Institute. Father Sirico, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Great to be with you, Dan.
Take care.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is the Dan Prof Show.